Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, we'll be best-selling author and designer, Alejandra Brady.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Andrew McGregor. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Outrageous synchronicities and astonishing occurrences. This is our episode 802, and that is the title of this episode. Now, we could have easily also titled this episode Overcoming Fear and Accepting My or Our or Your Spiritual Gifts. That is the subtitle of our interview guest's book. Now, why and what am I getting at? Well, how many times have you heard someone say, when you call them and they answer, I was just thinking of you, or I was just talking about you? Or the other way around, someone calls you after you mention their name or thought about them. Okay, what about the times when you dreamt of somebody or somebody dreamt of somebody and somebody either passed in the dream or they really did in real life, or you thought of them in the dream and then you saw them and it reminded you of something that actually happened in the dream? You know, this kind of thing happens so often to so many of us. And for me, most of my life, and lately I've been saying to myself, I need to write this down. I need to write this down, because normally I don't tell anybody. And sometimes when I do tell somebody, they don't know what to do with it. And I don't always know what to do with it. I don't always know what it means. And I don't think we have the right language for it. So I just move on and I don't share it and I forget about it. And I think I'm going to be reminded, thanks to our guest today, that, yeah, either I need to write them down or I need to give them more credence, or maybe we all do need to give them more credence. So lately, what we hear is people saying, oh, technology heard me talking and now they're sending me ads on this. But this isn't what we're talking about. That may very well be happening, but this isn't what we're talking about. And so with all of that being said, since we don't have a way of talking about it, I'm hoping we'll find a way tonight, or maybe we have a way, and that way might be we dismiss it. And I think maybe instead of just dismissing it, or instead of saying, oh, what a coincidence, and then moving on, maybe, like our guest is saying in the subtitle of her book, that there could be gifts there, it could be spiritual gifts. And maybe we need to overcome our fear of whatever it is that's blocking us from accepting these spiritual gifts.
Wow. We use words like serendipity and synchronicity, and yet we write things off constantly as coincidence. Yet we had that opportunity a long time ago, and today, I don't think we have as much of an opportunity to write it off. There's empirical evidence. There's groups like the Institute for Noetic Science that have done, you know, double-blind studies and PSI distance healing and cognitive studies. And there's just, you know, people like Greg Braden and Joe Dispenza, and so many people are breaking ground around the idea of the energetic field and the way we interact in our environment and our connectedness. So I'm really looking forward to tonight's conversation.
And so let's. Our interview guest is a feng shui practitioner. She's an interior and biophilic designer and a best-selling author of, get this, I love this title, I Just Can't Make This Shit Up. And you already know the subtitle, Overcoming Fear and Accepting My Spiritual Gifts. Alejandra Brady, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. I wasn't sure if you could say the title on air or not, so I'm glad you did.
I wasn't sure either, but I did.
I love it.
And you know, thank you for bringing this conversation to the fold.
You are so welcome. I think it's needed at this time. There's just a lot of people waking up, and I think we need to help give them the tools that I wish I would have had when it was happening to me, so that we don't feel like we're going crazy, you know, while all this is happening to us.
So your situation is very different than most people's. And so I'm actually curious if maybe some of it lends itself to more of the gifts. I think you know what I'm getting at, right?
Oh, which gifts?
Okay, right. Good one. So you have had many opportunities for your soul, your body to literally have to be quiet or have to stop and just be.
Yes.
And that is a whole different thing. Actually, let's go there. So from early childhood, your circumstances were different than most.
They're different than most, but it's amazing how much more common they seem these days than what I thought they were. So I was adopted as an infant. I was raised in Laredo, Texas, which is right on the border with Mexico. I was raised by a Mexican-American family, so Latin Catholic. So, you know, a lot of the things that I talk about now are not things that we spoke about growing up, and they would be considered, you know, not so good. But along the way, things that happened to me, the first one that I can remember when I was 16 is seeing my boyfriend who died in a very tragic car accident came to my room that night. He was dead. I mean, this, you know, but he showed up, and that was the first time that I saw somebody that I can remember. I think it happened before as a child, but I just don't have clear memories of that. But he came and said goodbye. And when I walked into my parents' room the next morning, and this is 1984, just to set the scene. So there are no cell phones, computers, TVs. None of that was happening in my bedroom. So I didn't have access to any information. I just walked in and told my mom I didn't want to go to school. And she just looked at me, and she was crying, and she had her hand literally on the telephone receiver, you know, attached, the big cord attached to the phone. And she asked me why in Spanish. And I said, because I knew that he had passed and I was sad and I didn't want to go to school. And that is what she was being told at that moment on the phone. Mm. Mm. So she just looked at me and she goes, you don't have to go to school. And I go, he died, right? And she goes, yes, mijita, you know, he died. And I just sat on the edge of the bed. And when she hung up, they were giving her all the specifics. You know, she sat down and kind of told me what happened. But that's the very first one that I recall very clearly. Now, what I didn't know was that not everyone could do this. It just seemed very natural to me. So it wasn't until I started writing the book and started piecing together all these things that I realized that these had been gifts that had been around for me for a long time, because the book didn't start till I was 50, and I'm almost 57. I'll be 57 next month. So, you know, it's been a minute since all of this started.
Well, so thank you for sharing that. That story is in the book, actually, and it's a quite powerful part of your story. And the part that I was also thinking of is when I was saying that you were quiet or had to stop or had to, you were held down. Weren't you in a kind of a brace?
I was in a back brace for scoliosis from the ages of 11 to 18.
Yeah.
And then now I'm also fused in that same spot. So I'm fused my lower lumbar, which I find interesting. My root chakra is fused. I have two bars and six screws, cadaver bones, mesh, wire, all the stuff. And my throat chakra is fused. I had another fusion on my neck, cervical fusion. So it is very interesting that I am fused in some interesting places. But yes, those are the things that have happened that have had to make me sit still and be still, and then finally, take the time to be quiet to then make the time for spirit to be able to come in. Because otherwise, I'm a type A person. I'm a busy, busy girl.
Wow. So now you, this happened with your boyfriend, and then other things started to happen. And these weren't easy for you for a lot of reasons, right?
Right. So I think from there, I kind of jump into when my mom died. I think that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
So she dropped dead at 66, and I never had a chance to say goodbye. And then my dad died exactly 6 months to the day later, and he died because she died. And she came to me, and she was at the foot of my bed for like 5 nights in a row. And this is after I'd come back. I spent about a month in Laredo with my dad. But when I got back to my house here in Tampa, for about 5 nights in a row, she just stood at the end of my bed, or sat at the end of my bed, just looking at me. And on the fifth morning, I woke up and I told my husband, I think I'm going to need to go get some help. I think I'm going crazy. She just sits there and looks at me all night long, and I can't sleep. And I just, was checking in with my dad that day. And I had been checking in with him, but I hadn't wanted to share this because I thought it would upset him. And unbeknownst to me, he'd been asking for a sign that she was okay, that she crossed over, that everything was good. And as soon as I shared with him that I had seen her, he started crying and he said, "That's the sign I've been looking for." And just to take it back to my boyfriend for a minute, the only thing I felt very strongly compelled to do as a little, 16-year-old who doesn't know anything, was to talk to his mom. So we waited about 2, 3 weeks after the funeral and everything had calmed down. And I asked my mom to drive me to his mom's house, and I told her that I saw him. And this is important because this is kind of the pattern that starts developing. These are really never for me. These things that happen, these visitations, they're usually because I am supposed to tell somebody, and somebody else has been needing it or wanting to know. I mean, my mom certainly is for me too, but it was really about my dad because as soon as I told him, she never came back. And then when my dad passed, I told my sister. And as soon as I told her, he never came back. So that's how I understood that that is what my job was. My job is to be, the messenger, not to try and figure it out or decipher it or do anything other than say, here's exactly what happened. It may not make any sense to me, and it's not necessarily supposed to, but it'll make sense to whoever it is that I'm giving the message to. And so I love that gift. I think that's a really beautiful thing to be able to do, for someone when it happens.
So, right, because you're calling these spiritual gifts and overcoming the fear, and the fear is a lot of different things, right? We're not just talking about the fear of seeing somebody pass or somebody that's dead, a ghost or what have you. We're talking about a fear in the world that we still have to live in,
The fear is this right here, like
right?
putting it all out there and, having people call me of the devil and crazy and every
Oh.
other word that comes with it. No, they never scared me. I only had one instance that was scary, and that was in Mexico, in Cancun. But we were there on Halloween night, and unbeknownst to me, the resort, this is before I knew that all this stuff was happening to me, but the resort that we were staying at was a beautiful, beautiful luxury resort on an ancient Mayan burial ground. So you can only imagine the night that I had on Halloween, which is also Dia de los Muertos de los Niños in Mexico. So that was the only scary, fearful experience that I've had in seeing people who've passed. Other than that, they've not been scary at all. The fear is this. The fear is saying, yes, I will accept these gifts. Yes, I will use them to help others. Yes, I will put myself out there and have these conversations where people are going to call me all sorts of names and think all sorts of things. And That is what I decided to do because I really do feel that so many people are waking up right now, and it would have helped me to have more than one person because I had one person I could talk to about this. It would have been really, really helpful to have more than one, you know, and to know that these things that were happening to me didn't mean that I needed psychological help. It meant that I was waking up spiritually because sometimes you don't know the difference. It's a little scary out there.
What was or who was the first person that said, I believe you, and really meant it?
My one very, very dear friend, her name is Heather. She was actually also a client at the time. So I've been an interior designer for over 20 years. And right when I got told I needed cervical fusion, it wasn't an emergency in the fact that I went in that same day, but it was urgent. The doctor was like, you know, we need to get you in and we need to get you in very soon. So she was having a feng shui master come to her house, and she said, "Hey, this person will also do a consultation for you if you sign up the same day I do, because then she won't charge us travel time. She'll do both consultations in one day." And something made me say yes. And Heather was much more in tune energetically, consciously than I was at the time. And so once she came to my house, told me what to do, I implemented it before I had surgery, had great surgery. The house energy changed drastically. So I was going back and forth with her because she also had hired me to implement all the suggestions that the consultant had made for her house. So we were talking now about energy. And that just kind of led into all of this. And that made me feel bold enough to share some of this stuff that was happening and that had happened. And that's kind of where it all started. She was my go-to. And so, you know, even in Mexico, after I had that scary experience, I was on the phone with her the following morning because I'm like, well, what just happened to me? You know, so she talked me through it and helped me understand that it was scary for me, but I was actually helping a little girl cross over. But I didn't know that. For me, there was just a body sitting on top of me, you know, that was scaring the crap out of me. So she is the first person. And since then, I've been very fortunate. I've built a little tribe, lost some friends along the way. And that's also something that is part of accepting these gifts. And, you know, part of this being scary is that you are going to lose some friends and family for anyone going through a spiritual awakening or a spiritual journey. I think if you guys have gone through that, you know what I'm saying.
And losing in the sense of they're not that they pass, but they don't want to be your friend or be associated with
Correct,
you.
correct. Or they're calling me, you know, of the devil. I find it very interesting that one person can have the gift of prophecy, but my gift, because I called it clairvoyance or claircognizance or clairsentience or whatever you want to use, because I use the word clair, it literally is when I asked them to define the gift of prophecy, it was like the exact same definition, but they're godly and I'm of the devil. You know, and I'm just like, that's just not really the way it works. And I feel I'm kind of the opposite. I feel like I am of the light and I am a light worker and I even speak in light language sometimes. And, you know, I am here to help guide those who are ready and willing and open.
I wasn't thinking I was going to be asking you this, but since you were making the distinction, like sometimes it's hard to tell if we're going crazy, especially if we don't have the understanding or the people to support us, or we don't know anything about this, between going crazy and actually having a gift opening up or revealing itself or awakening, as you say. Is there a way or how? Do you, because you said it doesn't work that way. So for people that are fearful, oh, it is of the devil, and there's a way of knowing that it's not. I feel like you have an answer to that, and I actually think you shared it with me when we were talking earlier inadvertently. So when we come back, if that's okay, we can touch on that.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So we're obviously talking with, oh, and I'm going to ask you what biophilic is because I don't know. So when we come back, Alejandra Brady will be back with us and sharing, as she has, her book is, and I think I can say it. So I'm going to say it. Her book is, I Just Can't Make This Shit Up, Overcoming Fear and Accepting My Spiritual Gifts. The book is available where books are sold. And of course, you can connect with any of the links that we have for Alejandra at the Life Changes Show page, or directly Alejandra, spelled just like it sounds, with a J, Alejandra Brady, Brady.com. And so we'll be back with more of Alejandra. Then we will have our Ask Dorothy segment. And later on, we are joined by our performance guest, Andrew McGregor, live here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition when we come back after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They are dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're having a great conversation with feng shui practitioner, interior designer, and biophilic designer, and best-selling author Alejandra G. Brady. Alejandra, what is a biophilic designer?
Sure. So where feng shui is more of an energetic practice, you know, I use a lot of my intuitive gifts. Yes, I have a lot of training. I am certified in it as well. Biophilic is much more scientifically based. It's a newer practice. It started, I think, around the 50s, if I remember correctly, during my training. And what it is the study of how nature impacts us as humans. In a lot of the research that has been done, it has been noted that about 64% of the world's population never sees the light of day during their work week. And that is just such a sad thing. Just think about that. Like, you never see the light of day. You guys are in LA, I'm in Tampa. I mean, I live on sunshine, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it might rain in the summer, but we need light.
And we all know it never rains in sunny Southern California.
Right, you've got it even better. But when you don't have light, when you don't have nature around you, it can lead to states of anxiety, depression, diseases. So it was just a very natural fit for the modalities that I already practiced, the interior design with the feng shui, and then the biophilic, to kind of have them all work together to create gorgeous spaces that are, you know, also energetically aligned and also interact with nature. So it's not just about bringing in a plant. Sure, plants are phenomenal, right? We all love plants. I'm a plant mama. And it's more about making sure that there's every single type of nature around you, and it can be indirect. Right now, I'm working on a pro bono thing for an ICU nurses lounge at one of our hospitals here at Tampa General, and their break room is in the middle of the hospital. So there's no light whatsoever. Mm. You know, there are no windows. So I'm bringing in wallpaper that has like a plant mural in it. So even though they can't be outside and no plants will live in there because there is no light, they can walk in and have it feel like they are interacting with the outdoors. I can bring in essential oils. You know, there's a lot of rules because it is an ICU, so I'm having to follow a lot of protocols. We can change the lumens on the lights that are overhead, so you're not just living in fluorescent light 24/7. You can buy lights with different lumens, some that mimic the entire range of the light of day, you know, starting from morning all the way to evening. And there's all sorts of things you can do. And you want to bring in a balance of all the elements, fire, water, earth, wood, metal, a little bit of everything so that you feel balanced and harmonious in the environment. So I love the way that that just kind of fit right in with everything else that I was already doing and implementing. And then that also helps me, you know, so when I go to your home, if I can't work with things in one way, we can look at it from a different point of view. So there's always an option and there are always ways that we can work with situations that may not be optimal for a person or their health or something else. You know, I'm most of the time when people call me, and I do consultations all over the world because I do them virtually or in person. But most of the time when people will call me, it's health, wealth, or romance. Like those are the big three, right? Relationships. So for health, especially, I can implement not only feng shui, but biophilic design as well. And I love that I can do that. So there's always a way to make it better.
And is there a book for that yet?
Not yet.
Okay. We'll have to talk again. I feel it.
There are some wonderful, wonderful biophilic teachers, and I might just let them have that platform. We shall see. This book took a lot out of me. What I did create, though, was a feng shui card deck. I don't know if you even knew that, but did create a feng shui card deck that's a deck of 77 cards. So by the time you go through all of them, you'll have feng shui'd your whole house. So if you're not like ready to work with me or just want to try it yourself, it's a great way to dip your toe. And as our son likes to say, because he is not as woo-woo as his mama is. So he likes to say, it's very practical. It's not woo-woo. I like this deck. Good.
And so, they can get that at your website, that, right?
Also, my website, Amazon, you know, all over the place. So, yeah.
So it took a lot out of you to write this book. So it wasn't something that you said, oh, I think I'll just do this. This will be fun. You actually said that someone told you.
Yes. So back to feng shui. Feng shui is kind of what I call my gateway drug into all the spirituality world, because once I introduced feng shui to my home, the energy in our home changed drastically, and it really just shifted everything. And when I aligned everything and balanced everything in our home, suddenly I became interested and I wanted to dive into meditation. So that was the next thing. You know, I was studying for my feng shui certification. Then I'm like, well, let's see about meditation. And the house just felt so light and very easy. And everything was just flowing a lot. And one of my very first meditations, I sat down and I really did. And I think this is a big key to everything for people too. I asked what my purpose was at this point in time. I was 50. I was recovering. I was still in a neck brace. I was recovering from my cervical fusion. Our son had graduated from college and was living his best life in Chicago at the time. And I was kind of at a crossroads because I had shut down my design business while I was recovering. And I wasn't sure how I was going to come back in and bring in the feng shui. Like, I wasn't sure how it was going to flow. So I very sincerely asked what my purpose on this planet was at this time. And a voice came in again, when people think, am I going crazy or is this really happening? A very strong male voice came in through my right ear because I'm highly clairaudient. And now I know this terminology too, by the way. You mentioned that before the break. I didn't have the words and I didn't have the terminology to understand what was happening to me at the beginning. So that is another way I hope this book is helpful. It will give people the words that I went to healers all over the place to learn and understand. So the voice came in and said, you're going to write a book. And I said, no, thank you. I have no interest in that. You know, there's just no part of me that wants to be famous or write a book or put myself out there. Why would I do that to myself? Like, why?
I'm with you.
Yeah, no, just a big fat no. And you wrote a book too, so don't say much.
I know.
And And I just, let it go. I finished my meditation. I came back the next day, and for 5 days in a row, I asked the same question, and for 5 days in a row, I got the same answer. And finally, at the end, I just said, "Fine. What would you like me to write a book about? What in the world do I have to say as a white, privileged, middle-aged woman? Like, who cares what I have to say? I have not been through any grand struggle." The way that you hear, because what you hear on TV and the stories that are in the movies, people have overcome such insurmountable odds. And in my mind, my life wasn't that. As I wrote it all out, I was like, "Oh, wow, this is a wilder ride than I thought." But at that point, not connecting the dots, I was just kind of like, "Who cares what I'm thinking?" But I was just told to start writing down what happened to me. Like, just start writing it down. So some days I wrote down nothing happened. This is a bunch of shit. Other days I had pages and pages of stuff to write. And slowly and surely, it became what it is today. I mean, the book has won 3 awards. It's a bestseller. I'm still in kind of disbelief over it all, honestly. But I feel very grateful. And I hope that it helps the people it's meant to help. And I know it's not for everyone. I don't want it to be for everyone. I want it to be for those who are ready and those who need a guide.
And how do you know that it's of the light for you?
Because every single day I do it, even before I came on this interview, I always clear myself. And in the morning when I get up, I ask to be of service. And I ask to be of service only and in the light at all times. Teachers and healers that I've worked with have taught me how to ask for that and how to protect myself so that I stay in the light at all times. Because for anybody who is highly empathic, you can just absorb. When you come home from somewhere and you just feel like in such an irritable mood, but you were fine. Like there was nothing that set you off. You didn't have an argument, but you're just suddenly very agitated or irritable. And then you realize, oh, I was in this big crowd or whatever. Like you took on someone else's energy, and that's what's throwing you off. Like a lot of times it isn't even us. So I was taught how to protect myself at all times, how to always ask to be of service, how to always say that I do not accept anything or anyone that is not of the light at all times. And I just try and keep myself in that state all the time. And I do it before I go to bed. I clear myself. I call all my energy back to my body and I release anything that isn't mine to carry. And then I do it again first thing in the morning. Then I go sit in my meditation room and meditate. And, that ends and starts my day every day.
Beautiful. And, speaking of beautiful, there are some beautiful people in our lives that don't get it, or it's not their time, or like you were saying earlier, you didn't have the words. Well, they don't have the path per se. I know it's interesting when I asked you who it was that said, "I believe you," right away. I was hoping it would be your husband because you guys have been married for a really long time. But obviously, you're in a great relationship, and that wasn't yet his time to understand, right? So we don't necessarily have to write people off who don't get it.
Oh, no, not at all. I think everyone is where they are, and I respect everybody at whatever point they're at, as long as they're respectful of me too. The imbalance comes when I start being called names or or sometimes people just, people are in your life for a reason or a season, as they say, and that may just be the time with someone. But no, my husband's my biggest supporter. But I'll share a quick story with you if we have time. I went to my very first past life regression and I was so excited about it, and I was there for like 3 or 4 hours. I got home and he's waiting with a beer for him and a glass of champagne for me, and he goes, "Tell me all about it," and trying to be super supportive. So I go through and tell him, and I talk about it in the book. It's a much longer story, but the end result is I am supposed to use my voice. And this is years ago. I'm supposed to open my throat chakra. I'm supposed to share my story. I'm supposed to use my voice to help others. I'm telling him everything that happened there. And the first thing he says to me, and he just looks me like really deep in my eyes, and he goes, "But you're not going to say this to anyone, right? They're going to think you're crazy." And I'm like, "Oh my God." So, It's not that he doesn't know how to support. It's that, it does sound a little wild for most people. This is second nature to me now, and now I can, it's, oh, it's just Tuesday. Oh yeah, somebody came through and, gave me a message last night, or, it's just another Tuesday for me. But for other people, it still is very earth-shattering. And now he has seen so much in these past 7 years. And thankfully, I would tell him stuff from way before, but we'd just blow it off. Because again, I just, I'd tell him, oh,
Right.
this happened. Oh, this weird thing happened, but no big deal. And then as we put it all together, but he has seen so much, and he has seen me go through so much and has witnessed a lot of my stuff firsthand that, he can't help but believe now too. We just came back from Egypt. We were in Egypt a couple of months ago, and he had some of his own experiences there, which I think
Ooh.
are amazing. I knew I would, because I have been told by multiple healers that I was Tutankhamun in another lifetime, and it was validated there at the museum in Cairo by a stranger to me
Well,
who tapped me on the shoulder and said something to me as we're in the middle of the exhibit. But my husband himself on our trip had some wonderful experiences that were very mystical and magical. And, I think he came back feeling a lot more open too. So,
did you tell him, I hope you're not going to tell anybody this?
no, on the contrary. I'm like, welcome to the party, hun. Let's go.
So what as we're I mean there's so much we could talk about. I'm so enjoying this. What as we're drawing our conversation to a close, so we don't want to dismiss what we're experiencing, obviously, even to ourselves, and we may not have somebody to share it with. So maybe we should write it down or say thank you, or what do we do?
I would say write it down. I would definitely say write it down, even if it never sees the light of day. It does not have to become a book. Trust me, it does not. Write it down so that you can refer back to it, and so that you can keep a timeline, because that became so helpful to me. And people even said that. They're like, how do you have such specifics for everything? And you have the exact dates. I'm like, I wrote it, I started writing it all down. And it helps you make sense, and you'll start to see patterns when you write it down. And it'll help you understand what direction things are going in. What is your strongest gift? Are you seeing people who've passed? Do you get messages from people who've passed? Can you, like you were saying at the top of the show, like, are you thinking of someone and they call you 10 minutes later? Or did you think of someone? I had an experience where I felt somebody hug me in the middle of the night, and I got up the next and I heard laughter. It was two men laughing, and somebody literally hugged me while I was laying in bed. And I woke up that morning and I told my husband, something's going to happen. Something's happening, because this happened to me last night. Within an hour, I got a call from one of my very close cousins, and her dad had passed. And her dad was my dad's best friend. So it was my dad and her dad that came that night. So, pay attention to those things. Pay attention to animals who are around you. Animals are amazing messengers. We have four rescue dogs, and one of them is actually, I was told by an animal healer, one of them is actually my second miscarriage. She said, I
Well.
don't understand what this dog is trying to tell me, but he's telling me that he couldn't come back to you as a child. Can you not have kids? I'm like, well, I am in my mid-50s. Hell no. And she's like, well, he's saying that he couldn't come back to you as a child, so he had to find another way back to you. I'm like, oh
Well.
my goodness. So animals are incredible too. We have four rescue dogs. They're each of them showed up for us. We didn't go looking for them. So pay attention to the animals, pay attention to the birds, pay attention to what people are saying to you. I had a house in Sedona in 10 days. Because I heard the word Sedona in the middle of the night. The next morning I got up, I saw somebody I hadn't seen in 10 years. And the first thing she said to me, she was, Alejandra, hi, how are you? Have you been to Sedona? I kid you not. I kid you not. And I'm like, what? And within 24 hours, three people had mentioned the word Sedona to me, to the point where I had to go look it up. I'm embarrassed to say, but I didn't know where it was or what it was. I didn't. I had no knowledge of it. And 10 days later, I owned a home there. And then we moved there during the pandemic. and wrote the majority of the book. And just as fast as I wrote the book and got there, I got told, go. And I'm like, go, but keep the house because I really like this house. No, go and sell the house. And this house sold in 48 hours and we moved out in exactly 10 days as well.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And that's a lot of gift honing also to understand what is being suggested or where the direction and the movement is going. Well, obviously you have laid out a good first step for people who are having experiences that they either can't tell anybody, or if they did, they would say, I just can't make this shit up. So there is that. That's the book. You can find Alejandra actually for a lot of reasons, obviously, from feng shui to biophilic designer. So thank you for sharing about that. And of course, thank you for sharing about your book with us. So you could go to the Life Changer Show and find all of Alejandra's links for Facebook, Instagram, etc. But her spelling of her name is Alejandra, Alejandra, and then Brady, Brady, and find her at alejandrabrady.com. Alejandra, what an absolute pleasure it was connecting with you. Looking forward to the next time.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of the night.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Alicia, and I have felt totally disconnected these past few weeks. My mind has not been as clear as I'm used to. I feel like I'm wandering in a fog, and I need to find a way out of this and return to my normal, happy self. Please help me figure this out.
Dearest Alicia, I intuit that you are simply not grounded, and as a human being, it is vital that we consciously ground ourselves, as this brings us back into connection with Mother Earth and assist us in becoming conscious of what is going on in our bodies. In these interesting times, more and more people, including myself, are prone to not being firmly rooted in our bodies. However, it is easy enough to ground ourselves. One way is to walk barefoot on grass or at the beach. One of my favorite ways is to hug a tree and say a prayer of gratitude like this. Thank you, thank you, thank you, God, for this wonderful earth. I am blessed to be here at this time of planetary transformation. When hugging the tree and doing the prayer, I feel a powerful connection to the planet. Another way to easily ground is to pay attention to our breath. After about 10 breaths, I find that I feel much more connected to my physical self. Grounding myself is extremely beneficial, and I'm doing my best to ground each morning upon awakening. I trust that grounding will assist you in leaving the foggy state behind you. Please let me know how you feel once you have grounded yourself for a week.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest here on the Life Changes Show, Andrew McGregor, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji.
We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back. Our performance guest is a musician. He's a bagpiper on a Grammy-nominated album. And so much more we'll talk about as soon as we bring him on. Welcome, Andrew McGregor, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I'm really honored and privileged to be here.
It's our excitement to be saying this, that just like our interview guest, we thought we were going to be talking about one thing, and then we ended up talking about all these other fascinating things. You are that person where we're going to be talking about music for sure, but holy cow, there you do so much and have so many things going, like TEDx speaker, the Highland Games, and actually I think it was because of you that I learned what chess boxing is. I bet you a lot of people don't know, and you're a champion. Could you share what that is?
Yeah, chess boxing is a relatively new sport. I founded the LA Chess Boxing Club, which is the first of its kind in North America, so I can claim that as well. But yeah, it's alternate rounds of chess and boxing, and one wins by checkmate or knockout. So it's basically a timed chess game interrupted by boxing rounds. So you play chess for 3 minutes, pause your chess game as is, go box for a round, and then you resume your chess game. Rinse, wash, and repeat like this until someone loses on the board or in the ring.
That is fascinating. And so there it is. And I'm pretty sure it was several months ago, but I'm pretty sure it's because of you that I learned what that was about. You're a filmmaker, and the Tiziano Project, is that the author Tiziano?
It's named after my journalism hero, Tiziano Terzani.
Yes.
Yeah, so I named it for him. He passed away before I had the privilege of meeting him, but when I was studying journalism at USC, his dear friend from when he was a foreign correspondent during the Vietnam War, Michael Parks, said, "You remind me a lot of Tiziano." And I'm like, "Who's that?" And so I immediately read all his books, or all the ones I could find. And then I actually reached out to his widow, and this beautiful collaboration started with his family. So yeah, it's Tiziano Terzani. For your audience who may not know him, he's this beautiful, brilliant Italian soul and intellect. And the book I would recommend starting with is called A Fortune Teller Told Me. Mm. And basically the premise of that is he was serving as a foreign correspondent in Southeast Asia, and then he just decided he wasn't going to fly in a plane for a year. And then he was supposed to be on a flight that crashed, right? So it had that thing to it. But it becomes this beautiful exploration of local values and what was being destroyed by globalization and things like that. But yeah, that's a little backstory on the Tiziano name, but yeah,
it is nice. Nice. Well, actually, we'll get to talk a little more, but there's a setup that I also want to make sure we get before we hear this song, because we were all thinking to ourselves, this is really cool. We've never had a bagpiper on the Life Changes Show, so this is very exciting in 802 episodes. However, little did I know that you would send us a song that not only has a bagpipe and you being the bagpiper, it has a yodeler, and we've never had a yodeler on the show. So here they are at the same time, which I didn't know even was a thing. And it's not until now, right?
It's a thing if you make it a thing, right?
You made it a thing.
So you can conjure reality in that way, I suppose, yeah.
Well, tell us what you conjured here before we hear this song.
So I am a bagpiper, and I met a yodeler named Doreen Kutzke in Malibu, California. She was on an artist residency for the Goethe Institute, which is this wonderful German institution. It's a German government funded institution that has like cultural centers around the world. You can go there and learn German, and they have film libraries and things like that. And so she was doing a residency as a yodeler. And so she and I got along, and then we just had this notion of like, what would happen if we mix these things? And then we recorded, you know, a track at the Goethe Institute in California. And then the pandemic hit, and we had these aspirations of like, we should do more yodel bagpipe things. And then so we stayed in touch throughout the pandemic, and then we reconnected in Berlin recently. And I went there and kind of sketched out an album with her. So it's going to be kind of four movements of these like longer 15-minute pieces. So very much in that kind of like ceremonial vibe, but more of a playful manner. And yeah, so Jed Smith is a Emmy nominated producer and a friend of mine, and he agreed to produce the album. So we're recording it in early September, and it should be available soon thereafter. But yeah, it's basically mixing bagpipes and yodeling, and it's a new unique sound that I think will resonate with people, pun intended, you know.
Well, is Yodel Roar what you're calling this, or is this the actual name of the track?
The Yodel Roar is the band, combining yodel and the roar of bagpipes. And then this track is just called Mountain Drone.
This kind Drone.
Of our first single. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here it is. Here's Andrew McGregor's Mountain Drone, pre-recorded on the Life Changes Show.
Last, there's no yodeler here. Yep.
Yeah.
Andrew McGregor, thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, thank you for sharing with your audience. Yeah, it's a true privilege to collaborate.
It's something very interesting. Interestingly enough, for those of us who don't know too much about yodeling or bagpipe music, it doesn't sound like the traditional of either of those that we would be most familiar with. But in an interesting sort of way, it almost sounds like it's very steeped in culture and a past civilization or something.
Because it is, right? They're two ancient instruments, and it's something pretty interesting in terms of our recordings and going forward as a live performance act. Is we're trying to, like, yodeling, for example, starts with a shepherd's call. That's literally its practical was to kind of call forth the shepherd. So a lot of the yodel acts, right, it's distilled now in this kind of like Heidi / Sound of Music thing. That's how modern society has viewed it.
Right.
But it didn't have a cultural purpose. And both yodeling and bagpipes were developed in regions with hills, right, where you need to communicate, you know, a few kilometers or miles between different clusters of people. So yeah, the authentic origin of both of these instruments and the development of their music was for kind of community and collaboration. And that's something we're working to maintain with the music as we go forward. So yeah, just that idea itself of a shepherd's call. We're trying to avoid using basically like electricity or PAs. So to have, because both instruments are quite loud, right? And it's possible to do that, but that is true to the original source of the instrument and the music.
Well, so loud, in fact, that the way we were going to work it today, that we would be able to have you live, wasn't working with the system and Zoom and all that, because it is so loud. And also, you were explaining also how part of the sound comes out one end and the other, right?
So to mic the bagpipes, the bagpipes are basically four instruments in one. You have three drones in the back, a bass, a middle tenor, and a low tenor. And then you have this chanter in the front that produces the melody. And so when you're playing outdoors, it all mixes together. But to like record near a laptop on Zoom presents some interesting audio engineer challenges. But we do what we can, you know.
Well, let's just visualize getting to have you present something at a live forum at some point. Of course, you're going to be doing that, so that's already in the works. Now, you seem like everything we were talking about earlier, and also when you and I were talking before the show, everything that we talked about that you have something to do with or you have expressed an interest in, you seem to delve into it a lot and learn as much as you can about it. By the way, speaking of interest, the word reminded me that you were named one of LA's 40 most interesting people by LA Weekly. And if people don't get a sense of why yet, they certainly will as we continue here. So you know about the bagpipe as much as you do, and yet this is a new instrument to you.
I started a few years ago. I saw a woman busking in Santa Monica at this place called the 32 Promenade, which is basically an outdoor shopping mall, and she was busking to raise funds to go to Scotland to compete in a bagpipe competition. Her name's Chelsea Joy. I think she's a Cirque du Soleil now. She's great. And so I saw her perform. I'm like, who's your teacher? This is really neat. And I got her teacher's name, which is Aaron Shaw, who's the lead piper of a great group called the Wicked Tinkers. And yeah, I just started to learn from him one day a week as a little quiet, private, creative practice, really. But it wouldn't remain that private for long. That's how it began. It was basically seeing someone doing the thing and then wanting to do it myself or trying to learn how to do it myself.
You know, interestingly, Andrew, this ties into like the conversation we were having with Alejandra. When we feel a calling or we're guided in a certain direction, it's interesting that you learned, you were inspired to play the bagpipes and learned just before almost being called to do something at a particular time in our civilization, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd call it a calling, but yeah, I was just there when I could be of service. So yeah. But yeah, so you're asking about the pandemic bagpipe series?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was basically just learning bagpipes, and I want to be clear that like it's a strenuously difficult instrument. Like I still don't think I play it. I'm just like, you know, riding a horse in a way. So it, like in Scotland, it would be weird to like learn bagpipes later in life. That would be like an American saying like, I want to be a minor league baseball player. It's just, it's not how it's done. So I was just learning it and I had no expectation from it. But then the pandemic hit and I was in Santa Monica and those lockdowns started where, you know, the only thing to do was not talk to anyone or not, you know, be near anyone. And they had put like chain link fences around the park and all these kinds of things. So I don't know where this idea came from, but I just had this notion to dress up in full Scottish regalia and play Amazing Grace every sunset. And it quickly became of great service to people. Because so many people were passing. And if we think back, you couldn't even bury your dead then. So people would come and they would film my performance and share that with their family. And it became like a funerary thing. And then I was doing this for months and months consistently. And one day, like the LA Times shows up. And then the next day, like a CBS news van pulled up and they recorded my performance. And then my performance was shared, you know, locally on LA news media, but then globally, given the nature of LA's content distribution. So I was like in a South Korean newspaper and in the Hindustan Times. Yeah. And none of that was planned, obviously. So it was just like trying to do something useful when everything else was taken away from us, kind of idea.
Mm-hmm. It became so useful that you were saying how people were recording it for their own purpose of mourning.
Yeah, and that's actually been the sacred part, because there's something about the pipes. It's a deeply ceremonial instrument, right? It's used for like going to war, funerals when you die in war, and weddings, right? Or like Happy New Year's. But it has that kind of cachet to it. So it did get deeply religious, spiritual, of like you're offering this sacred service to people. And that was all I could do at the time, because, you know, all we're supposed to do is just not leave the house, right? But yeah, there's a profound funerary connotation for the bagpipe. So I play a lot of funerals and occasionally a sporting event and occasionally a wedding, but mostly to help people grieve.
Now, thankfully, we are not in that situation anymore, but you have continued this for people, and now you do it every Sunday, is it?
Yeah, every Sunday. Just so it's known that it's something I do, and people will still come and they need it, right? And it helps with that catharsis. Yeah, so that it's basically this one spot in Santa Monica on like San Vicente and Ocean Boulevard in a place called Palisades Park. Right as the sun goes below the horizon, that's when I finish the song.
So, you know, actually, you sent me a video that your dad took literally last night, and I wanted to post it on our page where we have you and your website. By the way, the website being mightykingdrew.com, and you can find him at Mighty King Drew. Actually, we have all of his links, or many of them, at our website. You can even see him boxing and the Yodel Roar. .com. So go to Life Changes Show and you see those links. But MightyKingDrew.com will also lead you to many places. So I wanted to post that video there. Would it be okay to post that?
Oh, sure. And then like the LA Times story is kind of a complete video that explains the background as well. But yeah, whatever you want. I'm really on.
Well, we have that. We have that there. So yes, people can see that there as well. Let's see if we can get it posted, because it just was special, and knowing that your dad was filming it and that happened last night. But tonight, you actually recorded just before the show for us here on the Life Changers Show, this piece. And it's a very, special piece you've chosen to go along with the whole sentiment of everything that you have just shared. Actually, was that the first piece that came to you as the one to do that first time you walked out into the sunset?
Amazing Grace?
Yeah.
Yeah. That song, that's the only song I thought to play.
Wow.
But I didn't know that many songs, to be transparent. But yeah, that was the one that was like the sacred one I need to focus on. Yeah.
And so it is. Well, here it is. Here is Andrew McGregor and a piece he literally just recorded before the show. His version of Amazing Grace on the bagpipes here on the Life Changers Show. Andrew McGregor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's very special. MightyKingDrew.com is the website, and the Mighty King Drew on Instagram, and many other links for him. Go to the Life Changers Show page. Andrew, this has been very special. There's so much more that I would love talking with you about, and I know our audience would enjoy sharing, listening to you sharing. We have gone past our time together for now, but thank you for sharing like you have tonight on the show.
Yeah, thank you for the privilege of being here and for what you do, and yeah, for sharing these things. I profoundly appreciate it.
And our pleasure. Thank you, Andrew. Well, with a big thank you to Andrew McGregor, and another big thank you to Alejandra G. Brady. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark LeJure, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.